Hello, military and aerospace enthusiasts. Welcome to our channel, Deep Dive Defense. Over here, we take a deep look from unusual angles, which may challenge your mind. So let's dive right in. In the second video discussing the limited military exchange between Iran and Israel, named Operation True Promise by Iran, we will examine the weapons Iran used, the operation's execution, and its details. Iran employed four types of medium-range ballistic missiles, capable of reaching Israel. These mainly included older models from the mid-2000s, either Ghadr or variants ultimately based on it. This includes Imad, and a more recent upgrades of the Ghadr missile, featuring maneuverable re-entry vehicles for precision targeting and potentially evasive maneuvering to counter missile defenses. Imad ballistic missiles are an evolved variant of the Ghadr with major differences, introduced in the mid-2010s. The Kabar Shaykan ballistic missile, which was publicly revealed in 2022 but probably older, represents the most modern missile used in the strikes. Although we know that 100 missiles were used overall, the exact breakdown of each type remains unknown, and hence a major uncertainty for the assessment. The decision to deploy older Ghadr H missiles was on purpose, as they can be equipped with submunition warheads that disperse in space and individually re-enter the atmosphere. This allows them to release their payload before interception by missile defense systems like Arrow or Patriot becomes possible, making them effective against large, mainly soft targets like airbases. These warheads can also force lower-tier missile defense systems, such as the Iron Dome, to engage, attempting to intercept the relatively slow submunitions, which can include up to 10 or more per warhead, as well as flares and chaff to confuse radar and thermal sensors. Video footage from the strikes shows bright glowing objects descending slowly, some likely representing these submunitions. These can force even systems not designed to intercept ballistic missiles, like Iron Dome, to expend interceptors. If more valuable interceptors, such as Arrow 2 or Patriot, are mistakenly launched against these submunitions, it results in a highly unfavorable financial exchange ratio. Thus, using a large number of Ghadr H missiles on the two targeted airbases makes sense, as it potentially saturates both upper-tier missile defense systems and lower-tier ones. The inaccurate submunition impacts themselves can also cause significant damage to non-hardened objects in the large area targets such airbases represent. The next missiles used were Imad and upgraded Ghadr H, both featuring maneuverable re-entry vehicles. Imad was designed when Israel did not yet possess the exo-atmospheric missile defense system Arrow 3. A maneuverable re-entry vehicle, MARV, can serve two main purposes: precision targeting and evasive maneuvering, or a combination of both. It is unclear whether the MARVs of the Imad and Ghadr missiles possess evasive capabilities specifically designed to counter the Arrow 2, David Sling, and Patriot systems. These missiles have been equipped with exo-atmospheric decoys, such as inflatable decoys, to counter systems like the Arrow 3 or Standard Missile 3. However, this capability can be mitigated by high-performance sensors and advanced radar systems, which enable discrimination between real warheads and decoys. Without the U.S. deployment of high-end ANTPY-2 X-band radars crucial for decoy discrimination, the situation could have looked significantly different. Without confirmation of their evasive functionality, we cannot be certain if these two missiles were effective against Israel's ballistic missile defenses at their full capacity due to clear advance warning by Iran. Not all missiles in Iran's arsenal need to have evasive capabilities for overcoming missile defenses. Some can be only precision-guided missiles intended for use after other specialized ballistic missiles or systems have degraded the enemy's missile defense sensors and radars, or simply after the interceptors are depleted. Therefore, not every missile needs to be high-end. Some can be precision-guided for scenarios where the enemy's counter-capabilities are already degraded. The upgraded Ghadr and Imad missiles, both equipped with maneuverable re-entry vehicles, may have been used on a rather limited scale if they lacked evasive capabilities. The fourth missile, the Kabar Shaykan, is considered the most advanced and capable of those used in the operation. This missile is likely featured in the video footage showing direct impacts on an Israeli airbase. In one clip, at least five missiles are seen approaching, with one apparently intercepted or failed at the last moment. If it was intercepted, then likely by a David sling system with its stunner interceptor. Despite this, at least four of the missiles hit their targets on the airbase, demonstrating a systematic, not a random ability to overcome ballistic missile defenses. The K-Bar Shaycan stands out for several reasons. It flies on a depressed trajectory with a low apogee, meaning its highest altitude is comparably low, and it has a longer ascending and descending phase, during which it can maneuver using aerodynamic steering fins. This extended maneuverability allows it to start evasive maneuvering while still at secure distance from the ballistic missile defenses, creating engagement uncertainties. Even small random maneuvers can force the intercepting missiles to react and expend energy. The K-Bar Shaycan enters the effective engagement envelope of ballistic missile defenses at a higher energetic state than the interceptors, enabling it to perform multiple maneuvers of relatively small intensity. These maneuvers can cause the intercepting missiles in denser, lower atmospheric layers to disproportionately deplete their energy, reducing their range and effectiveness in the final, so-called end-game interception phase. The K-Bar Shaycan aeroballistic missile performs similarly to a limited hypersonic ballistic missile, maintaining maneuverability and executing evasive maneuvers even outside the engagement range of missile defenses. To achieve this, the K-Bar Shaycan is believed to employ so-called skip trajectory maneuvers, repeatedly bouncing off and re-entering the atmosphere. This technique allows it to periodically alter its trajectory, maintaining course and conserving energy by lifting up the upper atmospheric layers, where drag is lower. Due to these capabilities, the K-Bar Shaycan is one candidate for some of the 9 missiles warheads that Israel officially acknowledged struck Israeli territory directly, submunition Qadr H missiles excluded. Although K-Bar Shaycan is relatively new, it is not the latest or most advanced missile in Iran's arsenal. Given the approximate 20% failure rate estimated for such ballistic missiles, the interception rate of Israel's missile defenses, considering the uncertainty regarding the numbers of exo-atmospheric submunition warhead Qadr H missiles versus direct unitary warhead missiles, is quite commendable for the Israeli ballistic missile defense system. Estimates of interception rate range between 80 to 90%. The Israeli claim of a 50% failure rate might indicate the proportion of submunition Qadr H missiles versus unitary warhead ones. The exo-atmospheric release of submunitions is a world first and could be conveniently interpreted as a re-entry failure. Thus, by combining different claims, 9 impacts, 100 ballistic missiles, and 50% interceptable missiles, the interception rate is around 80%. Depending on the number of interceptors launched against each ballistic missile and how many were directed at false targets, this is still an impressive performance. However, the exact number of interceptors launched against each Iranian missile remains unknown. Typically, multiple interceptors are deployed to increase the likelihood of a successful kill, but useful numbers are unavailable. From footage of spent boosters, it is known that some of these rather harmless objects were erroneously engaged too by Israeli interceptors. Launch footage indicates that the number of interceptor launches was substantial, and both Israeli and U.S. sources report that between $1 to $1.5 billion worth of interceptors were used during the defensive operation. This cost-exchange ratio, much like with previous drone interceptions, suggests that Iran effectively strained Israel's interceptor stockpile to a notable extent, signaling the unsustainability of prolonged conflict for Israel. Consequently, Israel is significantly deterred to retaliate disproportionately to regain the escalation dominance lost to Iran. Additionally, the U.S. employed advanced and expensive Standard Missile 3 ballistic missile interceptors, with some reportedly failing, further indicating that a combined defensive effort was necessary against the Iranian strike. Beyond Israel and its allies, this operation sends a clear message to U.S.-aligned regional countries lacking robust missile defenses like Israel. Iran can strike at will and on a scale beyond their defensive capabilities, demonstrating that reliance on the U.S. for protection against such missile salvos may be misplaced. Considering these factors, it becomes evident why Iran chose this specific layout and scale for its response. A notable uncertainty remains, however, due to the absence of satellite footage of the radar base at the Golan Heights, which was claimed to have been hit and could account for material damage and casualties. Similarly, footage from the Ramon airbase is of insufficient quality to determine which parts were hit and whether a systematic precision strike pattern was evident. Nonetheless, Israeli experts can identify if such a systematic impact pattern was observable, allowing them to assess Iran's capabilities and its potential to strike targets at will in a future engagement. It's just sufficient for Israeli experts to tell their decision makers if statistical coincidence can be excluded for what they observed, or not. It can be said that Iran chose to respond disproportionately to gain escalation dominance and deter a meaningful counterattack by Israel and a continuation of the conflict. This decision resulted in a strike layout designed to avoid diplomatic isolation while demonstrating its capability to strike Israel. It implies that if Iran had decided to target something more critical and less defended, it likely would have succeeded. The ability to strike a target at will sends an important message, as Israel has many soft and vulnerable targets that, if hit by a single missile, could cause massive material damage or mass casualties. For instance, if all 100 missiles were concentrated on the Intel chip-making fab in Israel, the financial burden on this multi-billion dollar economy asset would have been immense. The Iranian salvo displayed such capability, indicating that if used against a country without formidable missile defenses like Israel's, as well as supported by the United States, it could have caused massive devastation. This serves as a clear message to regional countries within a 1,500 to 2,500 kilometer range around Iran. It also means that the past stability which Israel enjoyed in the region, made possible via its military technological superiority, has taken a hit. This is a significant problem for an economy that relies on attracting tech giants and foreign investors. Additionally, the operation demonstrated to Israel that simultaneously defending against ballistic missiles while operating its air force to intercept drones and cruise missiles would make its air power elements vulnerable to ballistic missile attacks. This mechanism of luring air power out of hardened bases to strike them with ballistic missiles was effectively displayed. The degradation of Israel's ballistic missile interceptor stockpile, a crucial part of its deterrence and total military capacity, also weakens its position against Iran and its missile forces. The financial burden of defending against up to 80 or more ballistic missiles, a notable portion equipped with unitary warheads and hence interceptable by ballistic missile interceptors, is another critical point. Reports of a cost of $1 to $1.5 billion for these defensive measures highlight the immense financial strain. Additionally, the efforts required by fighter jets to intercept drones and cruise missiles further emphasize the complexity and expense of the operation. The most significant impact of the strike was the level of deterrence Iran gained. Israel's counterstrike, which will be discussed in another video, was limited in scale and served more as a display of capability rather than an effective strike on Iranian soil. The Biden administration's request to Israel to avoid further escalation resulted in the clear loss of escalation dominance to Iran, which officially stated that any Israeli counterstrike on Iranian territory would be met with a 10 times larger salvo against Israel, most likely overwhelming its missile defenses. If the parameters of the simultaneous missile launches were altered upwards, it could easily exceed the engagement capacity of Israel's missile defense system, rendering it ineffective. Additionally, Israel's dependence on U.S. support to defend against the strike reveals political constraints with impact on its future decision-making. To conclude, targeting all 100 ballistic missiles at the various high-value objects in Israel would constitute a disproportionate response, unjustifiable in a revenge scenario for the 7 assassinated Quds Force officers. It could potentially trigger a strong response from Israel, an unofficial nuclear power, if the damage to its fragile soft targets were to be too high. This explains why the strike's design and planning took over 10 days, and why Iran warned Israel and the West beforehand, making the attack more challenging for itself, but limiting potential devastation in Israel. So that's all for today. If you enjoyed this video and like our work, please consider liking, commenting, and subscribing. We will try our best to answer your comments. Your support would be greatly appreciated and motivates to produce more content in the future. Thank you, and have a great day.